soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro, remate en el gol! Gol de oro! Gol de oro! Gol de Oribe!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show. Quick mention here for Jamie Roots, who after quite some time has left the Texans. But Jamie Roots deserves a lot of credit coming into that position at the Texans with the knowledge of the game of soccer, and obviously had to sell it and speak to Texans ownership about playing high-profile soccer games there. And you remember the first ever soccer game at Energy was the Mexican national team. He probably had to go to Bob McNair to talk about, let's start using our building for these high-profile games. And, you know, on and on it went. So big props there to Jamie Roots for that. That's another stepping stone here in Houston over the years. Now we just got to get the MLS product, the Houston Dynamo, rolling a bit here in the upcoming years, and there's some positive things heading into that season. But we're going to go down to Atlanta now, and Atlanta United FC broke onto the stage in a very, very big way in Major League Soccer, stumbling a little bit as of late, some differing things going on there. But there was one guy, when you talk about Atlanta United, that you want to talk to down there with Arthur Blank's club when it comes to soccer content. He is Jason Longshore, and he joins us now. Jason, how are you?
Doing well, Glenn. How are you?
Yeah, sorry. It's taken a while to put this one together here, but we've had a couple of challenges. But I'm very, very glad to have you on the show tonight and looking forward to talking to you about all things Atlanta United. So before we get into the CONCACAF drawing Alajuelense of Costa Rica, just what's kind of the – give me three of the main talking points right now with Atlanta United going into this, hopefully, April 17th start here in 2021 in Major League Soccer.
Yeah, I think the big one right now is just what the roster is going to look like, because it feels like Atlanta United is linked to a new rumor out of Argentina every day with players coming and going. So just a lot of fans are asking the questions about what the lineup will look like, what the roster will look like, how much turnover are we going to see. It's been a little bit more than I thought. There's also been some new faces that I would not have expected. A young up-and-coming player like Santiago Sosa, who is reportedly headed to Atlanta from River Plate. A veteran like Lisandro Lopez, which nobody saw coming, you know, at his age, but also, you know, the role he can play in this team. It's a really interesting signing that could be one that really pays off, with Joseph Martinez coming back from injury, but also expected to play with Venezuela as they try to qualify for the World Cup for the first time. And the biggest thing that people are talking about is Gabriel Heinze and what kind of changes we're going to see on the field. And, you know, more and more that I study Gabriel's time at Argentinos and at Vélez, I think a lot of people have looked at him as a Marcelo Bielsa clone. And I don't get that sense as much as I think he's somebody who's obviously influenced by Bielsa, but equally influenced by people who have been influenced by Bielsa, like Pep Guardiola and Luis Enrique. And I think he's more, I don't know, maybe even closer to Guardiola than he gets credit for. And I'm excited to see how he takes a team that's had elements of positional play every year they've existed. Tata Martino subscribed to that theory. Frank DeBoer subscribed to that theory. They did it in different ways. I want to see how Heinze builds on it and also incorporates the young talent that's on the way and the young talent that they're adding to the team.
Talking to Jason Longshore, color analyst for Atlanta United. So let's go back to Lisandro Lopez, because that one, you know, not that I think that age is always an issue. But when you're a 37-year-old forward, it's a little different than being a 37-year-old goalkeeper. I'm wondering if there's a familiarity piece here to Lopez. Yes, we know he can play. But for Heinze to bring him into the squad, this is certainly a bonus for him when it comes to communication, maybe comfort level. Who knows?
That's the sense I get, is that he's somebody that Gabriel Heinze wanted to bring when he became available. I mean, if you haven't been following Racing and their situation in Argentina, it's been a mess for a little while. And I think Lopez intended to end his career there, probably play another year at his, you know, boyhood club and then call it a day. But they've had issues in the front office. They've had issues in the boardroom. They've had issues in their technical staff with Sebastian Becasese walking away. And I think this opportunity came, you know, partially through the connections with Heinze, but also he fits that need. You know, he's not going to be asked to play every day. He's going to be a mentor, I think, to a young player like Jackson Conway, who's a very promising homegrown signing that I've had the chance to see in Atlanta United 2. I'm excited to see Conway. And he'll get a chance to learn from a guy like Lopez every day in training, and not as a coach, but as a teammate. I think that'll really help some of the young talent.
So Darren Eales returns from Inter-Miami, right?
Paul McDonough.
What's that? I mean, Paul McDonough. Excuse me. Paul McDonough. Darren Eales never left. Paul McDonough returns. tell me a little bit about that, because that's interesting, because a lot of success was achieved under Paul in those early years. Is this sort of a grasp to kind of get back to a place where we have a little bit more comfort in some of the people that helped make us successful back then?
I think it's a good fit for everybody involved. You know, I mean, Miami, I think the more that we've heard about how things kind of went down in Miami, it sounded like there were maybe a few too many cooks in the kitchen and pushing the team in different directions without a clear, you know, unifying voice. And I would assume that McDonough was kind of caught in different directions, you know, being asked to do this. I think the business side of the club got put in his lap pretty late in the game as well. And it was a very difficult job. And in Atlanta, everything wasn't on him. He actually was underneath Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales, and he was part of a very successful team. And those guys all get along so well. You know, they settle into their roles. They know how to work together, and they understand who is in charge of what. And that's such an important part at building a big club. I think it's something that, you know, Miami is going to have to learn to find the success that they want. It's something Atlanta realizes how important it is when McDonough left, and you can't replace, you know, somebody that you have that great relationship with easily. It's not something you can do overnight. And all these new teams coming in, you know, there's so much focus put on who the manager's going to be. There's so much focus on the general manager. It takes more than that. You've got to have the right collective in that front office to fill all these roles and get all these things done. Atlanta had it, and now the band's back together.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I was getting. And, of course, Arthur Blank has led wonderfully from the top, and it's only been about being the best from the word go. It hasn't worked out that way, but it certainly did in the beginning. It's still an amazing atmosphere. Now, my question here is, and I know we don't have the measuring stick of people being in the building and in stadiums, and I understand that sports has taken a backseat, no question, to so many things and to our habits. But do you get the sense in your media work, Jason, that crazy buzz, that crazy excitement around Atlanta United, you know, it may need to be jump started like every other team in MLS because you can't go to games. But do you get the sense that it's still there, it's strong, it's powerful, and maybe you didn't lose some people to the novelty factor?
Absolutely. And we saw it last year when we came back from the break, you know, with our games on radio on 92.9 The Game. You know, I'd see it on social media after a game, the usual buzz, the usual people who would have opinions about the game or were tweeting at us. even when the results weren't there. You know, it changed. It wasn't a whole lot of happy tweets, but it was still, people were passionate about it, and people wanted it to get better. And I see it on my Soccer Down Here show. Like, whenever there's news, it's like a jolt of lightning where, you know, so many people come in with questions and want to know.
I don't know if we lost Jason. Did Jason, he might have dropped. So we'll get Jason back. So this is a really interesting conversation with him, though, because, you know, it was off the charts in Atlanta, over 50,000 a game. I did a couple games down there had the pleasure to do a game there for ESPN. And, I mean, the atmosphere was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. They do this whole ritual before the game where the players come to one side of the stadium. They have to walk through the fans, who are cordoned off with railing. They all have the same suit and tie on. They sign a few autographs. They make a connection with the fan base. They look in their eyes before they go out to do their work on the field. So it is pretty incredible. The atmosphere, the ritual, and those types of things that have been created. And it's good to hear Jason say that. You know, with that much success right away, it's all about sustaining that success. That's something we could have done a better job with here in Houston. So, Jason, I'll let you just pick up where you left off.
Yeah, I think the buzz is still there. I mean, we saw it last year when we came back. It's there with every bit of news or rumor right now, whether it's, you know, when I'm on the radio, people are asking the questions about who these guys are coming to town. And with my Soccer Down Here show, people want to get deep into, you know, how does this player help the team? It's definitely there. I mean, even things like, you know, uniform rumors, you know, people are getting really excited about it and talking about it, and they like it or they don't like it. I think the buzz is still there, and so much of it is down to, you know, the mainstream media coverage that Atlanta United is fortunate to have in the city, because you always have something in the media cycle. You always have something to talk about, and it keeps the fan base engaged. It's been such an important element of Atlanta United's growth.
So you're always in the news cycle. Is it largely stuff around the competitive side of the game? Is it about players? Is it about signings? Is it about the competitive side of the game? And you know, not the, oh, you know, the commercial side or an appearance by somebody, but is it news stations, you know, doing pieces on the team, talking about a new signing and what it might do? And how educated is the mainstream media when they talk about the team in Atlanta?
It's been wild to see how it's grown so fast. I mean, you have, just like you would in any city, you have a lot of people in mainstream media who don't have the soccer background that we do. They didn't come up in it the same way that we did. So, you know, some of the nuances, some of the, you know, tactics are going to take a little bit of time to pick up. But the basic storylines that we have in sports are not that different. You know, you see a big player traded away or transferred away. How much is that going to affect the team to lose that player? You bring a new player in, bring a young player in. How quick are they going to help the team? I mean, those things are universal in sports.
I don't know. Did he drop again? Yeah, I think we lost Jason again. So he's talking about mainstream media down there and the coverage they get. And Atlanta United's, I mean, it's always in the paper. They got a beat journalist who's writing stuff daily. They just got a piece in there about the fact that they got drawn with Alajuelense in the CONCACAF Champions League. Is that segment over? Okay. All right, so if you don't mind, in commercial break, just call Jason back and say we were up on the hard break. Jason, sorry about that. That's Jason Longshore, though. I just want to tell you a little bit about him. He's a color analyst on 92 The Game, Soccer Down Here podcast. You can follow him on Twitter, at Longshoe. So at Longshoe is where you can follow him. And unfortunately, we lost him on the phone, but we get him back again next week. Because Atlanta's really, really interesting down there. By the way, Kubo Torres is down there. They've had high-profile managers. Tata Martino, Frank DeBoer. Now they got Gabriel Heinze. And back is Paul McDonough. So lots happening in Atlanta. All right, we're going to continue our search around Major League Soccer. Coming up next, ThirdDegree.net. It's Buzz Carrick coming up. Knows a lot about FC Dallas. He's going to take us into everything FC Dallas, the rivals of the Houston Dynamo. Show's brought to you by John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They're going to work for you 24/7 nights and weekends. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, they are bilingual. And you can simply call them. Very, very easy to remember here. 713-322-HURT. You get in a car accident, motorcycle, you might be an 18-wheeler driver, which is no easy thing to do. You might work in a refinery. You might do construction. Daspit Law Firm will cover you. 713-322-HURT. And by the way, they are, as I mentioned, bilingual. So it's DaspitLaw.com. And you know what? They're getting my shows on the air. We really appreciate it. And then it's the same up in Austin with our Austin show, which airs on the horn. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Buzz Carrick talking FC Dallas. We'll finish the night with Megan Oyster of the Houston Dash, and I'm looking forward to talking to both of these great guests coming up.
I'm Vlatko Andonovski, the coach of U.S. Women National Team, and you're listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis.
All right, thank you very much for that, Vlatko. We appreciate that. Vlatko Andonovski, very, very talented coach, now ahead of the U.S. Women's National Team, which will be playing in the She Believes Cup coming up here very, very soon. But right now we're going to shift our gears. We just went down to Atlanta with Jason Longshore. We're going to head up to Dallas now, ThirdDegree.net. He's covered Dallas very, very well over all these years. I think he's one of the unsung heroes. Doesn't get enough credit. I'm sure he does in the Dallas area for all the hard work that he does in covering the team and doing a wonderful job of it. He is Buzz Carrick, and Buzz joins us now. Buzz, how are you?
Well, I'm good. Thank you for the kind words.
I just wanted to know if you got your cut of that Brian Reynolds transfer.
No, I don't think they give me a cut of that.
I thought I was coming up for a big steak dinner or something. I mean,
yeah, me too. Yeah.
All right, so since I got you on, I want to get your thoughts on did you get to see Tigres? And I'm sure you probably did. Did you get to see Tigres today against Bayern Munich? And maybe your thoughts on the game, and maybe what it means regionally for all of us.
Well, unfortunately, I did not actually see the Tigres-Bayern Munich game. I was in the middle of editing the YouTube version of my podcast, Glenn, so I missed it.
Which is not easy.
So I just put you on the spot, and I don't have a good answer for you. So I don't have an answer for that game because I missed it.
No, not a problem at all. All right, so let me switch to Brian Reynolds. This was a huge transfer. I think it's $8 to $9 million. Correct me if I'm wrong. He was originally headed to Juventus. Gears shifted there. I think there's some talk that there was going to be a loan deal that he didn't really want. I don't know if that's the truth, but the funny thing is Dan Friedkin is the owner of Roma now, and his son's involved as well. He's based in Houston. You got Brian Reynolds now at Roma. Just take us a little bit deeper into this with your knowledge, and maybe talk to us about some things we didn't know. I think one thing we're very impressed with, and I know I am, is the fact that he was ready-made from Eric Quill's USL team, North Texas, to jump in when Reggie Cannon left to Boa Vista. And, you know, when I saw Reynolds get his first start, I said, wow, you know, this is pretty phenomenal, because this guy was ready-made and right away is thrust in and given the opportunity. So take it from there.
Yeah, you know, you would know as well as anybody that Brian was a winger, an attacking player when he was with the U-17s and the World Cup and such. And it was actually Peter Lucene, who's a FC Dallas coach, that first suggested that Brian might make an outstanding outside back, and they began to try that experiment. You know, when he had already been a homegrown by that point, This was after he'd come back from being with the U-17 quite a bit. And the progression started happening. And at first, there obviously was a bit of a disconnect. Brian wasn't super excited about the idea. But I think the underlying concept was that, you know, the kid's got so much pace. When he lines up from deep and runs at you, there's no one that can just turn and go with him as he goes by you. And when you take his innate attacking skill and you add it to the equation, it's just explosive. You know, he was in first team training with Reggie. He gives a lot of credit to Reggie for his development. And, you know, got a run in the beginning of 2019, got a run with North Texas, which was where they sort of tested it on a pro level against other opposition, and it was fantastic. And then after that, it was just a question of when is Reggie going to go? And so there was about a 6 to 8 month window where Reggie was trying to go, and they were trying to get Brian ready, and they were trying to ease him in. They didn't want to throw him straight into the wolves in MLS, so they tried to ease him in off the bench first. But once he was ready to get the start, then it was just the sky's the limit from there. And within a game or two, you just saw the explosive potential. And by the, you know, 5 games in, teams from the biggest teams in the world are calling, because, you know, these guys are scouting way before you get to MLS. They've scouted U.S. youth teams. They've scouted Academy. They've scouted, you know, North Texas off of tape. You know, no one's there's guys all over the place here in Texas. You know that.
Oh, yeah,
and then, you know, the explosive ability, and no one's buying Reggie. I mean, buying Brian for now. They're buying him for this immense upside, this immense potential where he could be, in their mind. They're looking and seeing, is this Alphonso Davies too?
But despite that, $8 to $9 million, was that a bit of a head shaker for you? Because, you know, I think the other big sell, like you, it is on potential. But there is no question, you know, his athleticism is off the charts. And to be a box-to-box wide guy, just, I mean, you know, everybody's salivating.
I actually thought it would get over 10 domestic, but, you know, Dallas wanted to retain a little bit of the sell-on. Yeah, you know, part of it was that Brian didn't have – if Brian would have had a larger contract from FC Dallas, like a larger base contract, that would have accelerated up a little bit over 10. You know, it came down just a little bit because of the mechanics of transfer with the loan part first and then the final payment, and also the fact that Dallas wanted to keep a little bit of the sell-on percentage. So – you know, there's some details in negotiation that kept it right under that. But once Juve was in and Roma was in, and people like AC Milan are calling and NM Milan's calling, and you hear about teams in France calling, and Club Brugge doesn't go away, it's like this is going to accelerate. And I thought it would get to 10, even though in the end it was just under that.
He's Buzz Carrick, ThirdDegree.net. I'll tell you why I love Buzz Carrick, because your takes, I mean, it's not a pander. You tell it like it is. You give your opinion, and I think we need more like you out there when it comes to growing, obviously, the game. So check his stuff out. You want to know about the rival, you want to know about FC Dallas, ThirdDegree.net. All right, so look, FC Dallas is clearly, branded itself as an incredible player development club, has had a lot of successes. He's got a great guy with North Texas now, and Eric Quill, who I know very, very closely. There's a wonderful setup there with all the differing parts of this club, and they're woven in together with, you know, Chris Hayden with the Academy, Andre Zanotta, Luchi Gonzalez, Eric Quill. There's a real commonality there with the way things are being done and how they're developing soccer players. No question. What I want to know, though, from you is, what is the end game? Because the relevancy of FC Dallas still remains low. It's similar to us here. We're trying to fight out of this thing. And the coverage remains low. You know, outside of guys like you who are doing tremendous work, there's no relevancy. So what is the end game? Is it simply the balance sheet and being a buying and selling club? I mean, how badly does ownership want to win titles? You know, how do you answer that question? Because it is confusing.
Yeah, there's definitely some questions in the market here. There definitely is a lack of relevance based on their behaviors and the things that they talk about being important to them. The legacy of their father is massive to the Hunt brothers, to Dan and Clark. The way they operate, to me, indicates that they are more interested in the long-term survivability than they are in the short-term winning. They do spend money, they just don't spend it the way the average fan might want them to spend. They spend money on the infrastructure. They spend money on the Hall of Fame. They spend money on developing this massive academy. Now, for them, one of the reasons why they're interested in the academy and the homegrown system is that the players that they develop, the academy makes money. The players they develop, they can sell, can make money. There's two ways for them to have revenue that can prop up the operations of the soccer team, which has never, as far as we know, made money, partially because they don't spend in terms of the market and getting into the relevance and getting into the mainstream. But they're more concerned with the of running a frugal ship that will last a long time than chasing the ring and losing a bunch of money and destroying their own franchise. Now, there has to be a balance. The Academy has done fantastic in producing homegrowns that fill in all the gaps on the roster and bolster the team and keep the team, generally speaking, in the top half of the playoff, the standings. They've made playoffs like every year, but I believe it's 7 years they haven't made the playoffs out of 25. So there's a solidity there that the Hunts really like. They just don't choose to chase with the humongous spending that some other people do. Now, since Zanata's come in, they've done more prime-of-career signings of these veterans from other countries. So it looks like they're trying to stabilize the top of the roster with some higher prime-career talent. Yet they're still not willing to go above about a $2 million spend on a given player. So there's a balance there. Will it work? We're going to find out if this works. A lot of it's going to be carried on the shoulders of guys like Pops and Pomacall and Jesus Ferreira, the young homegrowns that they have decided to keep that could be the difference makers if they can get to, if those kids can become MVP and DP level players. That can be how Dallas has a DP that matters, that's more of a frugal, it didn't cost you $10 million.
Okay, so you answered that beautifully, I would say. I would also say you exemplified very well the safety and the no skin of the playoff system in Major League Soccer, right? There is no financial damage that can be done to anybody by being demoted, right? So I think you laid that out beautifully also in your answer. So then I would say, if you're doing so well with your academy, why not go a little bit more than $2 million? Why not go 6 or 7 and maybe get that guy who accents all this good young talent that you're producing and wins you a title? And then how do you validate what a title can bring to you? That's certainly honoring your father, too. But I would just say, you know, that's what I say. I'm always like, okay, Dallas has got a good team. They consistently make the playoffs. I don't feel like they're ever going to win the MLS Cup.
No, and they haven't really done anything to make you think they're going to. This Brian Reynolds sale is going to be a big test because, as you say, in terms of American dollars, it's in the $8 million something range, right? So now all of a sudden there's this pile of money that they've said that they're going to invest 100% back into the team. So they have an open DP spot. They have two open roster spots. The technical director Zanata just said, we've almost done all of our signings for this winter. So they've left the door open. Maybe this is the time they're actually finally going to spend a little bit of that money. This is a big test. Will they do it? Will they get up to $4, $5, $6 million spend of this $8 million they brought in? On the other hand, we're in the middle of a pandemic and revenues are cratering in Major League Soccer, which you know as well as I do. So some of that money is going to have to go to underpinning the whole organization. But big test, you're going to reinvest the money. Are you going to be able to step up and try and keep up with some of these other teams? Or are you going to be perennial mid-table? We're going to find out.
Talking to Buzz Carrick, thirddegree.net, I highly suggest you check out his podcast. Great stuff. Really interested to talk to him. And you know, it's incredible. I mean, the Dynamo here in Houston, to your point about how good Dallas has been at moving players on, the Houston Dynamo still have not sold a single player to Europe. And this is, you know, they want to be in this game as well. What's the relationship like with FC Dallas's academy, you know, in a city that I know very well from you know, my player development days running the Hurricane soccer clubs and playing against the Dallas Texans and Solar and all these different teams? What is the relationship like with the other youth clubs in the community?
Well, unfortunately, the way Dallas went about building their academy, they did, you know, not unsurprisingly, they do take coaches and players from everyone else's teams and they bring them to FC Dallas. So there's a little bit of a scorched earth here in terms of the other clubs in town not being particularly happy with FC Dallas in that regard. There's some repairing that needs to do with those relationships. You know, we even hear stories of teams being banned from attending games. You know, you would think that the youth market would be a large part of what you're trying to do, and so you think you would want to try and want to repair some of those relationships. I think it would go a long way if when Dallas does sign a player from their academy, that they trumpet who else that player played for than just themselves. If they did,
yeah, but nobody's ever done that. That's eventual... I'm with you. The same thing here.
Yeah.
I don't know how you missed that. Yeah, you give everybody ownership in the success of the player in your community. It's like the oldest thing in the book, and it's never been effectively used down here. Like Memo Rodriguez, who's the best homegrown ever, right? The kid played at other clubs, the Houstonians. Yeah. Give the Houstonians credit. Give the team before that credit, because a lot of times these kids have been on 2 and 3 teams. This is how you create goodwill. Mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, you know, you would want the entire market with a goal of from every team to get to your pro team locally. You would want everybody pulling together, and it doesn't always end up that way. You end up with the kids occasionally that refuse to play for FC Dallas for some reason, and then you have it all the other round. The kids jump ship to the FC Dallas, and then their old club is mad. You know, a little bit of solidarity, if that comes through, would be great. Announcing where they come from would be great. It would help facilitate. I mean, because nobody, you know, FC Dallas at this point, very rarely does a player come from them from like the age of 8 all the way up. Almost 70% of their kids were somebody else first, you know. And so a greater level of love and understanding would go a long way, I think, to repairing the community.
Yeah. No, you're right. That's an absolute. You're nailing that one. And it give everybody ownership in it. I mean, that takes a lot of hard work. It means creating and building relationships, and you know, they have to do reparations now. It's the same here in Houston. There's a lot of, you know, you called it scorched earth, but there's a lot of, you know, people that have to be now brought back into the fold, and that's not an easy job to do, and sometimes you can never get them back unless you have the right people going out there putting Band-Aids on it and doing a reach out, extending the olive branch. Justin Che, all right, speaking of more FC Dallas activity, on loan at Bayern Munich. Tell me about this one. 17 years old.
Yeah, if you want, he's the next Chris Richards, if you will. He's a converted attacker. He's only been playing defense for a couple of years. Has the size, the athleticism, and because he's an attacker, he has terrific feet in the modern game. The modern center back can pass and can dribble past the player. That's a key thing. Now, he's still learning a little bit of the one-on-one defending, like how to have his body in the right positioning and how to bang up against the guy. But, you know, he has spent a whole season starting first at the right back and then at center back for North Texas Soccer Club. You know, he probably would have spent the bulk of this year doing it too. At 17, he got invited with the usual homegrown group to go over to Bayern Munich, and they obviously liked him enough and saw enough of that modern center back that they want to keep him around for 6 months. The key with him is he has a German passport. So he has a whole lot of freedom, even though he's not 17, 18 until November. He has a lot of ability to do whatever he wants to contractually, because of the fact he's got his German passport. So the loan is to the end of June. We'll see what happens. Maybe they'll keep him. Maybe he'll come back. But either way, it's going to be great for him in development, because he wasn't going to play for FC Dallas this season. He would have been in North Texas most of the time. So a tremendous opportunity.
Wow. I mean, there's, I think, 10 homegrown players on the roster as well. Tanner Tessman's another one that's been impressive for people as well.
Tanner is a great story because he's a little bit of a late bloomer. He was not, you know, involved with a whole lot of national teams until sort of the end of his academy days, when all of a sudden he's winning MVPs and of tournaments in the academy. And then Dallas was going to let him go to Clemson because he had that dual story about kicking footballs for Dabo Sweeney down there. And then Brian Acosta was hurt in the preseason last year, and they needed a body, so they invited Tanner to spring training. And he just knocked their socks off. And they're like, oh, my gosh, we got to sign this kid. So they quickly signed him and got him into the team. And because Tanner Costa was hurt, Tanner got a chance to play. He started showing. He's passed Brandon Cervani on the depth chart. And, again, this is one of the things that's attractive to these European clubs is things that they don't have. It's these big 6'2", 6'3 athletes that can also play soccer. And Tanner's a bull in midfield. People hit him and bounce off. And you just taking the guy down is almost impossible. and he's got an extraordinarily gifted long passing game with the switches and the breaking passes out of the deep playmaking, sort of like a deep eight kind of playmaking role. The big upside. Now, he may not be the starter opening day because you still have Brian Acosta here, who is a World Cup player, a DP, you know, 28 years old, prime of career, and Tanner's just 19. So there's going to be a little bit in and out of the lineup still, but huge upside. And he's one of the guys that probably is more likely to be sold than be here more than a couple of years.
Buzz, I got 30 seconds for you quickly. Tell Houston Dynamo fans what they're going to get with Fafapico.
Fafapico, lots of attacking verve, ability to get behind, wants to take on guys one-on-one, can drift in and out of games a little bit, has a really great game, and then maybe has a game off. But for the most part, I found him to be a positive attacking influence. He's not going to have the upside that you're going to want, but he is going to be a positive contributor to your team.
All right.
Fantastic guy in the locker room, too. Great guy. Everybody loves him. Wonderful dude.
Yeah, he was on the radio show. He was excellent. Buzz Carrick, ThirdDegree.net. Buzz, wonderful catching up with you. And by the way, you and me are lifers from 96. Let's not forget that, okay?
Oh, yeah, let's not. Let's catch up.
Back to the Cotton Bowl. Thank you, Buzz. All right, Buzz Carrick, that's great stuff there. I mean, he's on top of this stuff. This is great. Tremendous guest. We're going to come back. Megan Oyster, Houston Dash is coming up. Really looking forward to talking to Megan about the Dash and kind of what's going on with the NWSL. Great stuff there. I think one thing you have to remember, you have to give respect to your youth soccer communities as pro clubs. And I think sometimes that's missed. Has to be respect. There's people who have been out in those communities forever. They've helped to build it. And they need to be brought in when there's successes. We'll take a break. More to come here. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
People, this is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
All right, welcome back to the show here. We roll on here. Final segment's going to be a good one. We're switching over to the NWSL and the Houston Dash, and she's been on the show before. Excited to have her on as usual. Megan Oyster joins us now, center back for the Houston Dash. Megan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on again. Excited to be here.
It's always fun. All right. So I got the notion, you know, obviously you guys are back in preseason now. Your Challenge Cup begins April 9th. You don't really know what's going to happen league schedule-wise. You're expected to maybe start on the 15th. Man, that's a far way out to get to April 9th here. You got a lot of preseason here. I mean, I hope this thing is paced and timed out.
I know, right? I mean, yeah, 10-week preseason is not really what you want to hear going into a new season. But, you know, it's actually been really fun and exciting. There's a ton of energy already. And even though, you know, we know it's a long way into our first game, we're just, I think, really excited to be together. So regardless of how hard James pushes us, I think, we're ready and happy to be going through this together. So.
Talking to Megan Oyster, center back, won a national title at UCLA. Fantastic player. Helped lead the turnaround defensively last year, along with Katie Naughton in the middle. Talk to me a little bit about that partnership because, you know, similar to the Dynamo now with Tim Parker coming in, you know, you came in here and you were expected to make this team better, and you absolutely did that. So maybe talk about that a little bit because you are part of the backbone of the team, part of the spine of the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just so happy to be here with Katie. You know, going into last year, we both had known so much about each other and played against each other in the league for so long. And I just respect her as a player and her experience. So to go in this to the team together was just really exciting off the bat. And we've just continued to build our relationship and push each other every single day in training. And, you know, last year I did get injured a bit. So I wasn't able to play as much as I wanted to with Sadie. And we kind of say that to each other. We're like, wow, we only got maybe like 7 games together last year. And we have so much more we want to show people together. And, you know, there was a lot of pressure, too, to be the best back line and to, you know, take the step up and make this team better. And I think we did that in our own way, but we still have a lot to prove. And it's already looking good, I can tell you that. And every time we get a chance to play next to each other in preseason and every practice going forward, we learn so much. So, yeah, it's exciting, and I'm really pumped to get games started here soon.
Pleased to have Megan Oyster on Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5, talking Houston Dash. Okay, there's nothing worse than watching two talented center backs who play the game on their own. So, you know, when I look at a game and break a game down, I always look at two center backs and I say, well, how do they work as one, right? It's kind of like a play-by-play guy and a color analyst on a broadcast. If they're both on their own island, it doesn't work, right? So what are the qualities that you two have that you think is leading us to this point where you work as one? Because you both have a lot of great qualities as center backs.
Well, thank you for that. But, yeah, I think, you know, we're always just looking to be on the same page. We're looking to work together. I think, you know, she's always wanting to help me out, and I'm always wanting to help her out. And I can always count on her for that, and likewise for her as well. And to me, that's the best kind of relationship, is one where you know that even when you make a mistake, that partner that you're working together with is going to be there to have your back. And it's just, that's an instant feeling that we have for each other. And obviously communication is another huge thing, and I think we just, you know, our communication is just on point. It's really crisp and clear. We're not afraid to tell each other, you know, what we need to do to get better. And it's just always a work in progress and always striving to be better together. And I can't emphasize the word together more. I just think, you know, we really want to be on the same page, and we know that it takes both of us. So, yeah, it's really fun, and it's a really great relationship. And I'm just, again, I respect Katie so much, and I'm just thankful that we're here together and able to do this with this team. So it's been really fun, and just continuing to look forward to it this year.
So take me into what some of those subtleties would be. I know you got to be on the same page, but, you know, let's say, for instance, something like somebody's got to throw in deep in your final third and a center forward's running to the thrower. One of you goes in front, the other stays in behind. Just, you know, what are some of the little subtle things that maybe we can reach out and let people know about when it comes to positionally, or, you know, shouting at your center back partner to stay in the middle where the ball's ultimately going to go and not get dragged out on a night where maybe you're a little, you know, more aggressive and you want to come out of the middle more, you know, all those little really cool things that go on between two center backs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, you hit on a couple of good ones already, but I think just knowing each other's tendencies is a big one. It's, you know, Katie knows that I like to dribble a little bit more, so she'll kind of hold down the fort for us in the back and make sure she's continuing to organize everything behind if I do decide to, you know, penetrate with the ball a little bit. She also tries to, you know, set me up for those long ball passes that I really like to do. And I think, you know, knowing that I like to do those things and she, you know, helps emphasize that, I think is really helpful. And it's a really good relationship in that way. And same goes for her. I know, you know, she's really good in the air, and she's a really tall, good in the air center back. So when the ball's in the air like that, I'm always looking to cover right away and make sure things are organized around us. So there's a ton of moments that happen like that in the game, and it's always a work in progress. Every time in training when something like that happens, we look at each other and kind of give each other the eye, like, let's not let that happen again, or let's keep doing that. So I think, you know, we're always looking for those little moments. And like you touched on, there's stuff that happens all the time in the game. And yeah, we're there for each other and hoping that we get better each and every day at training as well.
Megan Oyster joining us. How much pressure does James Clarkson, you know, look, the center back position in the women's game as well. We got about 2 minutes left. It also demands that you be good passers of the ball. And obviously It's nice to have a center back who can hit a ball over distance and release people. Talk to me about how much James Clarkson, your coach, talks to you about distribution and those types of things, building the attack.
Yeah, it's always on his mind. I think, we really want to stand out the back like that. And, I think I do have a good long ball, and I have some range with my passing. And I think it's important to get that in training all the time. And so he's got an eye for it for sure. And if he sees something that I've missed, he'll make sure to, you know, be on my back about it, which is really, really helpful going into games and everything like that. So, I think as a center back, this has got to be in your back pocket. And the only way to be good at it is to continue to work at it. So James is always, you know, looking out for us and setting up drills that allow us to practice and work on that. So, he's great and definitely puts the pressure on to make sure that everything's crisp and clean and the way he likes it. And it's great. It makes me better and hoping to build off of everything from last year and continue to do what he asked this year as well. So,
Macon, that's a perfect way to end the show tonight. Thanks. We go out with star quality and you. Thank you so much for being on. We'll get you back on again. We'll talk some more. Maybe we'll get you and Katie on at the same time sometime and really do a deep down discussion of the center back position with you two excellent NWSL players. Thanks for coming on.
That would be awesome. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Megan Oyster, national championship at UCLA, played in the W League with the Newcastle Jets, also played with OL Reign, as well as the Washington Spirit, Boston Breakers. What a career, 28 years old. You watch her with the Houston Dash. We're going to say goodnight. A big thanks to Aaron Raybould, all our guests, all the great callers tonight. We got 10 seconds left. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Good night.